everybody. This is Simon Ward from the triathloncoach.com and SWAT Inner Circle. And today, this is going to be the very first of my new podcast series. And so it will be in a slightly different format. You see, in future, you'll hear me interviewing guests. But today, I'm joined by my friend, Tim Hemming. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Simon.
Yep. How are you going, Tim? All right?
I'm outstanding, thank you. Yeah.
So Tim is a journalist. He writes for the Times. He also writes for 220 magazine. He's an experienced runner and he's a brilliant interviewer. And today he's going to be taking the role of the host and I'm going to be his guest and he's going to be asking me questions about this whole podcast thing. So Tim, I'm going to hand over to you now.
Thanks, Si. Yeah, there's only one way to go from that, which is probably down. But we'll take from there. No, it's good to have you on your own podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Tell me, let's start from the top. What's the reason for starting a podcast, Simon? There's a few triathlon ones out there already.
Well, there are. And I've listened to them, Tim, as no doubt you have. And one of my thoughts about all the podcasts I listen to is that most of them are quite long. Some of them stretch to over an hour and a half. And to be quite frank, when I'm listening to them, I don't have time to listen to them all in one go. So they tend to get cut up into journeys between the swimming here in the swimming pool or when I'm teaching or coaching somewhere. And the problem with that is that I've often forgotten what the subject was on about when I come back to them. So these podcasts are only going to be around 20 to 25 minutes. So hopefully that means people can listen to them in one go.
Does this chime with your coaching philosophy, which is not to set people 4-hour turbo sets? Because if you're setting them 20-minute turbo sets, then they've got 20 minutes to listen to a podcast.
Well, not really, because as you know, on my polarized training, they get short, sharp sessions when they probably won't be able to concentrate on much other than managing the pain. And I do set them quite long turbo sessions if that's what they want, particularly the guys who have compu trainers. So not really. I just wanted to, you know, me, Tim, I'm quite contrarian. If everybody's trending one way, I'll tend to go the other way just to offer something different. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. If nobody listens, then we'll have to make it a 1.5-hour podcast and just talk until we die.
That's not a bad philosophy for life, as long as it's not on the bike course. going the wrong way, obviously. Yeah, just make sure you picked up on that one. So, look, if somebody's listening to this for the first time,
yeah,
they understand that you want to do a podcast, but why should they listen to Simon Ward, the coach?
Oh, well, Tim, I've been coaching now for 20 years as a triathlon coach. I've got 30 years in triathlon. This year, in fact, and I've got a lot of experience. I've been voted Coach of the Year 5 times by the readers of 220 magazine. So I think that counts for a little bit. In fact, this year I was runner up, but that's probably one of my proudest moments because I was second to the great Malcolm Brown, a man I like and respect an awful lot and who's been involved with the Brownies up here. So I think I've got a lot to offer. I want to try and stretch the guests to beyond the general sphere of triathlon. So we will have triathletes and coaches from within the sport, but we're also going to have some experts from outside of the sport who may be able to add some of their knowledge. So, for instance, we've got a guy called Rob Fern. He's a doctor. He's a gastroenterologist, but he's got a particular interest in stomach issues suffered by ultra-endurance triathletes. And I think he's going to have some really valuable information when we get a chance to listen to his podcast. So, yeah.
So from ultra endurance to ulcer endurance in that case.
Oh, yeah, well, could be, yes. Or hopefully not ulcer endurance. But
who else have you got lined up to come on then?
Well, so far then, we've got 8 interviews in the can. So we have another of the great practitioners from the Leeds performance area. We've got Alison Rose, who is a physio of some repute. I've heard people say that she's one of the best physiotherapists in the world, certainly in the UK. She's worked with Paula Radcliffe, Kelly Holmes. She was Jessica Ennis-Hill's personal physio, and she's worked with a lot of the elite athletes at the Leeds Triathlon Performance Centre. And Alison's got some really good insights into triathlon injuries, running injuries, and also how to prevent those. We have Paul Newsome from Swim Smooth, and then I've interviewed 2 or 3 triathletes that I know and respect, age group triathletes so far. A couple of those guys are in the 60s and 70s and still performing at the highest level for their age group. So by that, I mean they're taking the one slot that's usually available for them to go to Kona and racing there regularly. And I'm really interested to know how those guys just stay on top of everything right through into their sort of seventh decade, really.
So I think the thing that you said there, which interested me, with Alison Rose and Paul Newsom, and also the age groupers who are still going on the longevity, it's the applied knowledge and then living in the real world. Alison's been there with world-beating performance. Paul Newsom's style with his swim coaching is very much focused on the realities of triathlon rather than the pure swimming in a pool. And I guess if these guys are still churning it out at 60 and 70, then they should have a real good handle on how best it's done. And you could contrast that with a lot of the sort of pure coaching stuff that comes out that takes into no account of what's going on in people's real lives.
Well, a lot of my coaching, most of my coaching, Tim, is for people who do Ironman, and nearly all of those people are living in that real world. They've got jobs, they've got families, they've got travel, they've got life problems, and they've got high expectations for their Ironman and half Ironman performances. And trying to juggle all of those or spin all of those plates without dropping any is a real difficult task. And whilst it's interesting to hear about how our pro athletes approach training, it's not quite the real world that most 99% of other triathletes exist in. And I'm very pragmatic with my coaching. I try to base it around the problems that people have rather than tell them that, you know, this is what you need to do, and you've either got to get on with it or find something else. And I will be finding guests who, as you've identified there, have that pragmatic real world approach to their coaching and their work.
Have you got an idea of how many athletes you've coached over the years?
Well, I've sort of limited myself to 20 per year or 20 per season that I coach directly. So over 20 years, that 20 times 20 would be 400. But I've got some guys that have been on my program for 15 years. I think you interviewed one for your Brexit podcast the other day, actually. And he's not an isolated example, so there's probably a couple of hundred that I've coached directly, but now I've got the SWAT program. There's 200 people on there who I'm guiding and providing coaching advice to, even if I'm not coaching them directly. And then there's all the people that I've been involved with where we've been the official coaches at various races. So I don't know. It's upwards of several hundred, but probably not quite at 1,000 yet.
Yeah, it's a fair number. You mentioned the SWAT program at the top of the show. So what actually is that?
Well, SWAT stands for, it's not special weapons and tactics. So I'm not leading some underground survivalist movement that's going to come to fruition when the apocalypse hits, or when the Brexit deal's done, whichever comes first.
Harry Wiltshire's doing that, isn't he?
Yeah, that's Harry Wiltshire. Yeah, this is called Simon Ward Athlete Training. I felt that I had a lot of people that were buying some of my products, and I wanted to provide them with a place where they could hang out, where they could get guidance and advice from somebody they trust, and where I could give them access to all the resources that I have created over the years for just a simple monthly fee. So that's what SWAT is, and it's working quite well at the moment. We have nearly 200 members who've been on the program now. I'd say most of them hang around for at least 12 months, so that's quite good, I understand it, in terms of what they call continuity programs.
So a few little quick ones. What's your favourite part about triathlon, Simon?
Well, as a triathlete, it's the as a triathlete, as I am still competing, my favourite part is seeing what I can accomplish and also overcoming those obstacles that are placed within your path, either during training or on race day. So some of my most satisfying events have been some of the shittiest days I've had out there, and when it would have been easy to give up. As a coach, my most satisfying part is to see people cross the finish line having achieved something that they didn't think was possible, and with a smile on the face and realizing that having done that, actually just about anything they set their mind to is possible.
Yep, taken right out of the Ironman textbook.
Well, I spend most of my time coaching people to that, and I've been at the finish of more events than I can care to remember, and I've had a few lumps in my throat at those races and a few tears as well, and lots of smiles as well. So, yeah, that's the most satisfying part.
Yeah, for any listeners that aren't aware, anything is possible is a very fond strapline of Ironman.
I think I might have been using it before they did, but of course I didn't trademark it. Yeah.
You're probably not allowed to use it now then.
Well, I'll just turn it to a Yorkshire phrase and call it out as possible.
And if they and if there was one event that you'd encourage people to take part in that you've done previously, which one would that be? And let's keep it a long distance one, because I know predominantly you coach long distance triathletes.
Right. Well, my first ever Ironman was Ironman Canada, and it is in a beautiful part of the world. It had fantastic people. It was just a great event, and I recommended loads of people to go and do that. I did it myself I did it six times and finished five of them. And I took lots of people to it. But sadly, that one no longer runs as an Ironman event.
That was in Penticton, is that right?
That's correct. Although they are using it for the ITU Worlds this year, I understand. So anybody who's thinking about going to ITU Long Course Worlds would have a fantastic time in that area.
I think there's a few other events actually taking part as well. I think the ITU have got a whole host. I think there's some cross worlds and all sorts going. It's not just super long stuff.
Oh, yeah, they've got that aqua bike thing, which I love. Swim bike would be right up my street. Not having to bother putting any running shoes into transition would be is a perfect format. I'm just occupied by another event coming up a month later this year. So actually, I had the opportunity to go to Penticton, sort of removed as an Ironman now. My new favourite race to compete in is Ironman Austria, another perfect venue for racing. Beautiful lake, lovely scenery, great part of the world. Just a nice place to go. Good time of the year to race. In terms of races that I think are brilliant to work at and help people towards, the Outlaw is another one that I would recommend. It's an event that I commentate at every year. I help a lot of people to finish, and I have an enormous amount of pleasure doing both, really. So, and it gets voted as the best race with over 500 competitors on a regular basis for a good reason, and that's because it's just a great event.
It is a good event, isn't it? I've actually done that one, and I did thoroughly enjoy it. Well, yeah. Some of it. Anyway, let's talk about triathlon as a whole. So what's actually happening in the triathlon scene? You mentioned Yorkshire there. You're obviously a Yorkshire boy, and it's a bit of a hotbed. But Alistair Brownie doesn't seem to be racing in the World Triathlon Series this year.
No, well, actually, I think you'll probably find he's racing in Leeds. We've got a lot of people in Leeds at the moment training up for that race. But he's gone long, hasn't he? Finally, after years of trying to persuade him to go along and doing that interview with Tri247 sort of back in 2011, he has followed his promise to try out the longer distances. I wouldn't say he surprised me or anybody else in Leeds, but he seemed to surprise some of those Americans about his performance in St. George, particularly where he smashed the bike, and that Uber biker Lionel Sanders didn't really get anywhere near him on the bike. Much against the predictions of the slow twitch readers who suggested that Lionel was going to pull back 8 minutes on Alistair and then it was going to come down to the run. It never really materialised. So, Alistair's gone long, and it'll be interesting to see what happens when he goes even longer and tries out the Ironman.
But his younger brother decides he doesn't ride his bike anymore. He carries it.
Yeah, well, you know, we saw that Lance Armstrong chappie doing a bit of cyclocross one year, didn't we, in the Tour de France, and it served him well. And it does just go. I know that all the high performance lot in Leeds do a weekly cyclocross session on the grass with the bikes, which does include a fair amount of jumping off and picking your bike up and running over obstacles. And, for that one occasion when young Johnny had to run with his bike on his shoulder, it proved that particular training came in useful, in the same way that when your goggles get knocked off, the deliberate practice of swimming in the lake without goggles comes into its own.
Yeah, we are, of course, referring to the World Triathlon Series event that took place in Yokohama.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, he couldn't pull back the time deficit on the run for that one.
Yeah, it's funny, actually, because, well, it's not funny. I spoke to several of the athletes in Leeds, and they all said that course had been changed from previous years, and they tried to make it more technical. However, they didn't seem to have allowed for the fact that it was going to be like an ice rink, so adding increased technicality with more corners and narrowing it down a bit, plus the slipperiness of the course just made it like an ice rink. And quite a few of the Leeds performance guys came back with bruises. And I spoke to Non as well. She was lucky that she came off she was lucky she was able to ride her bike, because she came off on the first lap. That would have been a long run for her, carrying a bike.
It is one thing, I suppose, probably because it's so rare that you ever see a Brownlee involved in a crash. And they're bike handling skills have been something they've honed from young kids. Mm. But that's one thing that's often overlooked when people, I think, want to do Ironman. And often, you know, you can get on your time trial bike and go on a straight line for 112 miles. But the actual ability to handle your bike, well, if we're looking to the Brownies as the best in the sport, then perhaps we should, and obviously you'll be proposing people do this, to invest a little bit more time in improving their skills, not just pushing down the pedals.
Well, when you live in Yorkshire and train in the Yorkshire Dales like the Brownlees do, you have some fairly steep descents and you have some fairly rough roads and they're quite narrow. And occasionally you can have other obstacles that are unplanned, like sheep and other animals. So, you know, being sharp and being good at looking after and controlling your bike is a worthwhile skill. It's certainly one that a lot of triathletes don't particularly work on or possess, which is why most people in cycling clubs are always a bit nervous when triathletes join them. But I know you giggled a little bit when I mentioned the weekly cyclocross sessions, but I do think that riding your mountain bike regularly in the winter and riding a cyclocross bike and learning to handle a bike at speed on rough conditions can pay dividends. I mean, if we go back to Alistair a little bit, there was some well-publicised footage of him descending on his new time trial bike, which he'd only had for a couple of weeks, on the crossbar a la some of the Tour de France guys. We didn't see him pedalling like Chris Froome, but he, crouching on your crossbar, descending at speed, takes a fair amount of courage and certainly some good skills. I've tried it myself, and at a certain speed, your front end goes a little wobbly, and if you come off, you're going to be in all sorts of trouble. So you've got to be confident, and you've got to have good skills, I think. So, it's something I'd be recommending, Tim. For sure.
What, being sat on the crossbar and descending in a high speed on a time trial bike? Maybe build up to that first.
Not necessarily that one, but definitely working on bike handling skills, not just, like you say, not just being able to develop a high functional threshold.
Mm. But from an outside observer's perspective, I would suggest that people thinking about tuning in and downloading your podcast, this might be one of the things that they will pick up from you, because I have always noticed over the years you do think a little bit laterally on occasion, and I think that can be useful, because the other thing about triathlon, of course, it is swim, bike, run at the end of the day, so you need to keep it upbeat and interesting all the time to keep your motivation.
Well, there's another thing there as well, is you talked about thinking laterally. When you swim, bike and run, you tend to go in a straight line, so there isn't a great deal of lateral movement at all. Which means that you end up developing some muscles way too much and other muscles not enough. I actually did a little calculation the other day based on the number. If you were to run 2.5 hours a week and you were able to run for, say, 50 weeks of the year, you do 1.3 million steps if you're running at 90 steps per minute. Okay, 1.3 million steps. So that's 675,000 repetitions with each leg. So if that's going straight ahead.
Now, I'm going to have to pick you up slightly, because 90 steps a minute would be incredibly slow. But
it's 90 steps with each leg. It's 180 steps per minute. Yeah, but that's 1.3 million. So it's 675,000 with each leg. If you do 180, if you can pedal at 90 RPM. Then that's 90 pedal strokes with each leg. That's 2.1 million pedal strokes if you cycle 4 hours a week, 50 weeks of the year. And if you swim 2 hours a week and you do 65 strokes per minute, it's 400,000 strokes. But that's all in a straight line. So it's no wonder that people get injured, when, particularly if most people haven't got perfect technique, they're doing everything in a straight line. So I have a lot of my athletes, and I would recommend a lot of people, try to introduce some lateral work. Running off-road and running through the woods where you're having to change direction frequently is actually a really good training exercise. And coincidentally, the Brownlees do a lot of their running on the Chevin. It's that off-road sort of forested area. You often see in some of the videos that they do. That probably helps with their running as well. So, yeah, thinking laterally, but also acting laterally, Tim, is part of the way I set up my coaching.
Great stuff. And do you know who your first proper guest will be? I mean, you are your first proper guest, but who's going to be on show number two, Simon?
I'm not sure, actually. I think I might get Alison. Well, I've got them all in the can now. I think I might put Alison on there first because, you know, I've just been reading a book called The One Thing. It talks about the one thing you need to do to be better at your chosen thing. Maybe it might be you as a journalist. It might be me as a coach. If you wanted to be a better triathlete, a lot of people think that the one thing they need to do is training. I actually think the one thing they need to do is stay healthy, because if you're injured, you can't train. So maybe I'll start with Alison, because she will be talking about how to minimize your injury potential as a triathlete. And that will be a good place to start, I think.
Sounds good.
Well, now the die's cast now, isn't it? I better make that one the first podcast.
Sounds good. Well, we said we were going to keep it fairly short and sharp, and I think we've run to about 25 minutes. Simon, thanks for joining me on your podcast, and good luck with the rest of them.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. And before I go, thank you to you. I would love to have you back on as a guest, Tim, because we've got an awful lot of stuff that we could chat about in the triathlon world. I know you've got a lot of inside knowledge as well with some of your journalistic experiences. But also, for those guys who are listening now or in the future, if you want to get an encapsulated sort of breakdown of some of the information and knowledge I've picked up over the last 20 years as a coach and 30 years as a triathlete, I've written all my tips down. I then cut that down to my top 50, and then I've cut it down to my top 12 tips to help you become a better triathlete and perform at the highest level you can do. If you go to my website, thetriathloncoach.com, you can download it from there, or you can write to info@thetriathloncoach.com and we will send you out that little PDF and you can get started. So there you go. That's it for today. Tim, thank you very much once more. And listeners, I keep saying readers, listeners, I look forward to welcoming you back to future podcasts. Bye, everyone.